The fun thing about Nola is that he's getting more strikeouts in almost the exact opposite way that you expect guys to get more strikeouts. You think you naturally think that when someone is getting more strikeouts, they are getting players to they're getting batters to chase better. because that's generally where those whiffs come from. But Nola is his percentage of pitches thrown in the strike zone has jumped way up from 47.5% last year to 57.5% this year, and his he's getting batters to chase much worse. His he batters chased at 61% of his pitches outside of the zone last year, and that's at 53% right now. And this stuff is borderline significant. It's not really significant yet, but it's an interesting dichotomy there that he's doing it purely with his stuff in the zone, and that's a really good sign for his future.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 89 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined as always by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayre. Brett, how's it going? Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. This is nice. When I have to do is not show up all the time, and then I get a really bombastic welcome.
Yeah, you're kind of like that cast member that everyone loves who just kind of, bursts through the door occasionally, and everybody cheers, and it's nice.
I'm like the Kool-Aid man of this podcast.
Oh yeah. and also Mike Gianella. Mike, what's going on?
I'm just here every week, so who cares?
Yeah, but Lucas Dude is hitting home runs. Everything's got to be good, right, in the world?
As a Met fan, I don't have many leagues this year, though. So, yeah. Brett and I were actually talking about that today. I'm sad I don't have him anywhere.
Well, it's that was a downer. Man. Okay.
This all started with you, like, being all effusive to Brett. And then, like, hey, Brett, we missed you. It's like, Mike...
Darkness. I don't know how to ramp the energy back up after that. Anyway, I can do this. We got a great show for you tonight. Brett's back. Mike's still here, which is awesome. We love you, Mike. You can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. You can email us at flagsflyforever@baseballperspectives.com. Finally, please subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever app you use to listen to the podcast. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to dive into the fab bidding for Tout Wars and Labor, and we got a fun second segment, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And we're back here on Flags Fly Forever, and we're going to start off with Labor Mixed, because Mike and Brett purchased a pretty big buy. Sean Manaea was the big buy. He went for $18. Brett, I know you're sort of the Sean Manaea champion. There's a lot to like there. What was the thought process behind picking him up and making the investment there?
Part of the thought process is we have a lot of fab, and this year is not shaping up to be a great year to save that fab for. And if you kind of use that as a baseline for what we were thinking, I actually like Manaea a lot. There's going to be some ups and downs in the short term, as with just about any pitcher. But when you're looking for a rookie pitcher, the two things that you really want, since everything else is more or less unpredictable, is you want to look for a guy who has consistently missed bats in his pro career, and you want to look for a guy who's going to be playing in a pretty favorable home park. You put those two things together, your chances of finding someone who can stick as a, you know, as a most week starting option in a league this size is pretty good. And Minaya fits the bill on both accords. He's you know, his consistency is troubled throughout the minors, but that's become a little bit less of an issue over the last really over the second half of last year and throughout the start of this year. You know, there are going to be starts where he walks too many guys. There are going to be starts where he, you know, where he gives up a couple too many hard hit balls. But, you know, he's got really good stuff from the left side. He's very deceptive in his motion, and he catches headers a little bit more off guard than you would think based on his stuff, even though the stuff is well above average. And I think with Chris Bassett's injury, he's getting the chance to prove that he should stay in that rotation long term. It's not like they have a bunch of Sonny Grays in that rotation. They have one Sonny Gray and Rich Hill, who's one of the best pitchers in baseball when the right Rich Hill shows up. But other than that, I mean, yeah, there's certainly the chance that he'll get sent down to the minors when Henderson Alvarez comes back. But that rotation is filled with risky guys from both a performance and a health standpoint. So I feel pretty good about Minaya getting 20 starts the rest of the year. So that's, you know, that was my thought process. I know I was a little higher on him than Mike, and we ended up, we threw out some initial numbers in bidding. We ended up shrinking back a little bit closer to Mike's original number than my original number, and I think it worked out well because we were the high bid anyway, so there was no need to go up into the low 20s. But Mike, what are your thoughts on Minaya? Is that more or less how you feel? Are there pieces of that you agree with?
I agree with most of it. The only thing I'm a little leery about is I could see him getting sent back down at some point, particularly if the A's are going nowhere, if they want to conserve innings with him. However, the rest of it, in terms of performance, I agree. In terms of FAB, and I wrote about this in the FAB article, not only are you correct, Brett, that the talent is just not there this year, people are being too conservative. People are bidding, you know, fewer FAB dollars than they were last year for a talent pool or for an expected talent pool that just isn't going to deliver. It's only $80 lower, which doesn't sound like a lot so far. But if you just sit on your money and sit on your money and sit on your money, you're going to kind of get stuck, and you're going to kind of wind up in that position where you just have nothing to spend it on. So I don't mind the buy. I'd rather stake it on a player of his quality and roll the dice. It's a league we can reserve somebody. So if he doesn't work out, we're not stuck with him, you know, week after week after week. Quite honestly, it's nice to have that depth to trade from if he works out. Our starting pitching has done really well. And our team overall, I think we're in second place right now as we're talking to you on Wednesday night. It looks really good, but it's nice to have, you know, we've had a couple injuries this week. It's nice to have that depth to trade from in case we need to.
Yeah, the one big thing about Minaya, and that's what you touched on, Brett, the strikeouts are going to be there. He had six against Seattle in five innings tonight. I wrote the call-up piece over at BP, and the one thing that's interesting about him is he had 257 strikeouts in 214 career innings in the minor leagues. And both you, Brett, and Ben Carsley ranked him a top 50 prospect on your top 101 list coming into the year. So a lot to like there, and I think it's interesting that people haven't spent as much with their FAB, Mike, that you pointed that out, because the prospect crop isn't necessarily as good. There may be only a couple of big-name prospects that you would anticipate coming up and making a huge impact the rest of the way, so I guess I'll throw it to either one of you guys who wants to take it, but do you see a reason why people aren't spending as much, or is this just very confusing and doesn't make a whole lot of sense?
It's the Carlos Correa hypothesis at this point.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of owners that spent their FAB the way they usually would have last year, and then all of these great prospects came up and they were just like, oh, I don't have enough FAB left for these people. These people are awesome, and they were awesome. And you know, it's easy to fall into that trap, but last year was absolutely the aberration. This is not the norm. And just like last year is the aberration, I think this year is going to be the aberration in the opposite scale. I mean, you talk about guys that are in the minors who were not drafted in leagues. I mean, I'm excluding players like Lucas Giolito and Trey Turner and Tyler Glass now, and even Julio Urias in some leagues. Those are the guys that we know are going to be up at some point. Those are the guys that were taken in drafts. I think I think almost all those guys are owned in labor already. So you're talking about waiting on. Mike and I were talking about this. I'm not going to ruin our strategy for everyone out there, but the crop of people coming up, the hitters that are out there are almost non-existent. If you play in a league where Trey Turner and AJ Reed are owned, and you didn't get Nomar Mazara or he was owned, the pool is extremely shallow. And it's deeper on the pitching side, but it's also less predictable on the pitching side. So, you know, saving fab, there are going to be a lot of people buying middling starters for $10 to $15 in August in labor if owners keep spending like this. And, you know, I think we kind of noticed that and didn't want to sit on our money to the point where that happens. Because if that happens, then you're just not spending your money wisely.
Yeah, it feels like almost an overcorrection the opposite way because we had so many impact prospects come up last year. There just isn't as much talent left in the pool as there was a year ago. You know, you mentioned it, but a lot of the big name prospects are already owned in most leagues. I mean, what are you saving your money for? Like the chance that like Andrew Benintendi jumps three levels and comes up? Like there just aren't guys like that who are out there right now. So that's an interesting wrinkle. Mike, where are you guys at in terms of, because we're about a sixth of the way through the season. We're almost to the quarter season mark here. With labor, where are you guys at in the standings? Jake Arrieta has obviously carried you guys. I know you kind of, there were jabs when you guys picked him back up again this year. It was trying to reunite the band, but he's pretty much maybe the best pitcher on the planet in that conversation right now.
There were mild jabs. I don't think people were. It was more of a, you know, he's going to pitch to a 3 ERA and be good as opposed to being a stud and maybe doesn't belong in that class. And you know, Brett and I were fairly. We didn't think he'd do this, but we were fairly confident that he'd be a top five guy. And you know, we went with you know our beliefs. So right now we're in second place in labor. It jumps around a lot even at this point in the season, but it looks like we're about 6 points out of first. Oddly enough, our biggest weakness is stolen bases, which you know, having Billy Hamilton in tow kind of explains some of that. I mean, he's stolen some bases, but he hasn't been electrifying it to date. He's had some minor injuries. Byron Buxton has hurt us there too. He you know got sent down, and before he got sent down, he did absolutely nothing. But on the whole, our average is mediocre or worse. We knew that coming in. We expected that. The power's been terrific. Manny Machado has been the anchor that we were expecting him to be. Walker and Marcus Semien have justified our middle infield strategy of taking guys late. We know they'll cool off, but they're going to produce value even when they do. And the pitching, which we alluded to before, has been deep. You know, behind Arrieta, haven't really had an arm who struggled, and we're going to lose some points and saves when Andrew Miller goes back to the setup role, but he's really good, and you know he's going to keep our ERA and our whip really up there. So injuries could change the complexion, but right now, Brett, if you disagree, let me know. Right now I feel really good about this team and where we stand, and I think we're going to be competitive again this year.
Yeah, I do as well. I mean, it's funny looking at the distribution of this. I mean, we have three players on our entire roster who had more than one stolen base in the first 4 weeks of this 4.5 weeks of the season. One of them is Alex Rodriguez, who has two. One is Hanley Ramirez, who has three. And then there's Billy Hamilton with five. And we have a couple people with one. But You know, Machado has none. I think that's a little unexpected. I'm hoping that number bounces up a little bit. We haven't gotten any from Estribal Cabrera. We've gotten one from George Springer. So there are places where we can improve there. I think the batting average is exactly what we thought it was going to be. If we can finish the year with 5 or 6 points in batting average, you know, I think I might just take that, given the given what we have in the other categories. But I want to, you know, we'll get to the pitching in a second, but Mike, I want to ask you a question. I mean, we talked quite a bit about what our middle infield strategy was with this, and today was the day that Manny Machado gained shortstop eligibility, which is frightening, but also awesome. And this is, you know, we also have two third basemen. We drafted two third basemen, so we have Matt Carpenter at third base, who we're playing at corner. And we have a little shuffle ability. So with Hanley Ramirez, who's first base and outfield, we have some room to move people around. Are you surprised? I mean, the answer is yes. But how surprised are you that the fact that Manny Machado has shortstop eligibility just doesn't seem to be that big of a deal for us?
I'm a little surprised, just only in the sense that of our middle infielders, I thought one of them, and you know, I thought it'd be Estribal Cabrera, but I thought one of them would be disappointing at this point, hitting 230 or 240, and you know, with not much else, and maybe we, you know, consider moving him to the bench. At this point, Cabrera, you know, he hit his, I think it was second home run today, but he's been hitting for average. He's been productive. He's been hitting high up enough in the lineup on some days where he's scoring runs. We don't really have in our infield, we don't have that hole on offense where we're like, oh God, you know, thank God, you know, Manny Machado is a middle infielder. The thing it does do for us, and you know, we haven't been big traders in this league, but the thing it does do for us, it does give us that flexibility now to kind of go to a team and say, hey, you know, if you're interested, you know, in Neil Walker, and that's kind of a hard play to make because this is an expert league and it's hard to sell high on a guy like that. But, you know, if somebody wants to pay for Walker or Semien and we want to shore up somewhere else, you know, outfield or you know, even our DH slot with A-Rod now on the DL, I think we can do that and kind of do that with no fear.
Yeah, and the other part of that is that we have, you know, we have a couple of outfielders sitting on reserve in Byron Buxton and Jesse Winker, who are both in the minors, and I think both will be back up within, you know, I think the next four to, well, Winker to make his debut, but I think both will be up in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And, you know, given Hanley's ability to slide and Carpenter's ability to slide, it gives us a lot of flexibility in terms of what we want to do with our lineup, which I think we were even with our lineup last year, I think we missed some of that flexibility. I think if I remember correctly, I don't think we had any multi-eligibility guys last year.
I don't think so. And last year we talked about this, goes nice full circle. You know, last year with the Fab, we Fab Schwarber, we Fab Sano. I think we had one other. I mean, those are the two big ones, but we had one other pretty good buy, and we were able to use Fab.
It was Jason Grilly.
It was Grilly, but I was just thinking of the hitting side. So we did a good job, though, on the hitting side of getting those guys via Fab and taking a bench that, you know, wasn't super weak but wasn't deep. You know, you're absolutely right, Brett. If those guys come up and if they're up in a month, we have something we haven't had in our 3 years in labor, which is a nice bench. And, you know, whether it's trades or, you know, whether there's the injuries that inevitably happen, you know, if Winker and Buxton are even semi-productive and productive like fourth or fifth outfielders, it's nice to have that on your bench as opposed to going out the free agent pool in a 15-team mixed and being like, you know, we picked him up a couple weeks ago and cut him, like, yay, Mark Reynolds.
All right, I like Reynolds.
Yeah, he had a good week, but, you know, it just as far as, you know, I'd rather have a productive Buxton or Winker than Reynolds.
All right, we need to get this moving on, or else we're never going to get through everything.
That's fine.
All right, cool. So let's talk about some of the other big names who were picked up, big names in quotes, in terms of the Fab dollars that went for. Five guys went for double digits in mixed labor and tout. So, Brett, which one of these five is the most interesting pickup for you? Seth Smith, Jesse Hahn, Brandon Drury, Trevor May, or Michael Fulmer?
I think the most interesting one for me is Brandon Drury, and I don't think it's particularly close. And we talked about Jesse Hahn, and we put in a contingent bid for him, which we would not have gotten anyway if we hadn't gotten Manaea. Hahn is good enough. He's a two pitch guy. He won't get a ton of strikeouts. The park will help, but he also has had a rough go of staying healthy. So, you know, I think he's a fine enough option while he's playing, but I'm not that huge on him. Drury has been a solid hitting prospect, and he's kind of been playing he's been playing all over the place for Arizona, and I can see them making room for him wherever they can, and getting him, you know, close to 450 at bats by the end of the year. The power is going to cool off. He doesn't have that much power in his bat, but the ability to hit is pretty legit. You know, I think he's closer to a 270 to 280 hitter with maybe 15 to 20 homers than a guy who's on pace to hit 30 like he is. But, you know, Chase Field does weird things to people sometimes. And maybe that 15 to 20 ticks up to 20 to 25 if he takes advantage of it. But I think that if he gets the opportunity, and it looks like he might, he could be more real the rest of the season than Trevor Story.
Let's say I know nothing about Michael Fulmer. In 30 seconds, what do I need to know about Michael Fulmer?
In 30 seconds.
Well, a quick summary.
Big-bodied guy, can throw lots of innings, took the Worth and slider to go with him to Detroit, throws it pretty well, can miss some bats, just not enough upside there for me in most mixed leagues to go too crazy about, especially with that defense. Was that 30 seconds?
That's pretty good. I'm asking because he went for $361 in tout mixed, I see here. Which
to Eno Saris of Fangraphs, who, you know, knows a thing or two about pitching. So I should have asked Eno about this on social media and, you know, related to our audience, because, you know, I certainly respect his opinion. I'm kind of curious as to why he did that.
It's a lot of fab. Mike, anyone else you want to talk about from the mixed side, or because most of these guys are kind of in the onlys as well here from the rest of the list.
I think Brett really, you know, covered a lot of this, so I don't necessarily think we, you know, I guess the one guy I want to mention just from a strategy standpoint is Joe Smith. Mm-hmm. So Joe Smith was a backup bid for us behind Manaea. He went for seven. I commented on the piece that's pretty solid. That's a solid amount of money to spend on a temp closer. The other side of it, though, is not a lot of strikeouts. We know that about Smith. The thing I like about him, oddly enough, is that there isn't an option behind him, a flamethrower in that bullpen, or somebody who screams out, you know, closer or stopper if Smith stumbles a little bit. So Smith is a good guy. You know, he's not going to do what Andrew Miller does in terms of the rate stats, but he's a good guy to maybe pick up, you know, I'd say five, six saves while Street's out. And the saves this year, you know, I think that Matt Collins noted this in the closer report this week. We haven't really, outside of injury, we haven't really had a closer stumble yet and lose his job, which is kind of unusual for early May.
Ryan Madsen and Jeanmar Gomez lead their respective leagues in saves, I believe. Which everyone saw coming, right?
And, you know, I made the point this morning that the three guys entering today who hadn't allowed an earned run, Wade Davis, predictable. Andrew Miller, nobody'd be surprised by that. And Fernando Rodney.
Fernando Rodney's strange.
Well, they tweaked something with him with the Cubs, I found out today, and he apparently carried that over to the Padres, and he's been fine again.
How old is Fernando Rodney?
38. Oh, my God. Is he 39?
I think he just turned. Yeah.
Well, anyway, Mike, we're going to stick with you. Tout Wars NL, Ichiro Suzuki was the big bid. Did you pick anyone up? I'm scanning.
I picked up the guy who was doing great for four innings tonight and then started getting shelled, Adam Morgan.
Ah.
So I say shelled, but, you know, Morgan, that's about par for the course for him. First time through the lineup, solid. And Cardinals still have a good lineup despite, you know, some of their struggles. At this point in Tout, with the really lousy start I've had from some of the pitchers, I'm already playing the volume game. I'm not raising the white flag, but I'm running a lot of starters out there and just trying to pick up strikeouts, trying to pick up wins, which, you know, you mentioned Jeanmar Gomez. It's a weird thing to say about the Phillies that you're trying to pick up wins. We could do a whole podcast about the Phillies, you know, just from a fantasy perspective about, you know, what it means that team is better than you think they are. Actually, I'm going to ask you guys just to throw this out for a second. So Phillies at this point, over under for the season on wins, over under 77. I'm going to start with you, Brett.
Over.
George.
Under, but slightly. It's going to be like 75.
Yeah. I'm over two. I think it's going to be close. There's some slippage coming with this team. But the thing is, and I bring this back to Morgan, the pitching and the changes that are there are legit. If you had an opportunity today to read Ken Rosenthal's piece on their pitching coach, Bob McClure, there were some pretty good insights for, you know, from McClure and what Ken talked about in some of the changes they've made, to the pitcher's approach there and to what they're doing. And organizationally, it just wasn't talked enough about this offseason. You know, I talked to Matt Winkleman, our friend of the show. He actually listens. He had some notes for me about Jared Eichhoff and something I got wrong on the last show about some adjustments he had made in the offseason, and I kind of noted that in the comments to one of our pieces. But the point being is, you know, one of the reasons I picked up Morgan, he's not any great shakes, but his velocity's up, and you know, I think in an NL only, he's kind of solid as a back end guy. So yeah, I was looking for another pitcher to kind of cycle in and just hopefully pick up some volume. At this point, unless both Adam Wainwright and Shelby Miller recover and you know pitch to the level that they should pitch to, I'm not going to win ERA and WHIP. I have to kind of hope to finish in the middle and just play the volume game elsewhere.
I'd be more optimistic about Wainwright than Miller.
I am too. At some point, I'm probably going to have to reserve Miller, but he's got Atlanta this week. If he can't fix it against Atlanta, he's going to get stashed.
Speaking of Atlanta, Brett, I don't want to turn this into the all prospect show, but Ozzie Albies went for $65. He was just promoted to AAA. What are the odds he's actually in the majors at some point this year? If you had to put
about
a percentage,
100%.
Really?
100%.
Yeah, I'm surprised he'll be up. It's a question of when he'll be up. But I agree with Brad. He'll be up.
I mean, it may be August, but I think it's 100%.
Yeah,
I'm surprised by that. What type of fantasy impact are we talking about? I know what the real life impact is. He's a fantastic shortstop. Is it Swanson who's moved to second base, or is he at second base? I'm trying to remember.
No, they're both playing short.
They
Swanson's in Double A. Yeah.
That's right.
I think from what I heard today on the ESPN podcast, it sounds like Swanson's a guy who might move to second.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Swanson didn't play shortstop at Vanderbilt until his junior year. He played either third or second. I can't remember whether it was third or second, but he moved to shortstop his junior year before he got drafted.
Yeah.
So he has experience at other positions. I mean, it's not like you need to move him off shortstop. This is more like a Jurickson Profar type thing where Profar got moved to second base because Elvis Andrus was there. In almost any other organization, Swanson would play short.
He's going to be like their Javier Baez type. He can play, you know, three positions on the infield pretty much. So Albies, what type of fantasy impact would you reasonably expect at 19 years old in the majors?
I think he could steal some bases. I mean, I think he'll make enough contact to you know, have a slightly net positive batting average, and he could steal, if he's up for the last 2 months of the year, he could steal 7 to 10 bases. There's no reason not to let him run. I mean, the team sucks, so there's no reason not to. And you know, I think he's got a good enough approach and a good enough control of the barrel that I think he could hit more or less from the get go.
That's interesting. I didn't even really have him on my radar because I didn't think there was a real shot he'd be up this year. But yeah,
I stashed him in my other NL only for zero. I just, it's a daily fab, so yeah. I just put him on there and I'm just gonna hold on to him and, you know, bring him up at some point.
Yeah. So someone to definitely put on your radar. Anyone else, Mike, who's interesting that you kind of look at on this list and go, oh, that was a pretty savvy move?
Not really. It's a pretty brutal list. You know, I saw Brett Wallace have two impressive looking hits this week, but I have a feeling that's an anomaly.
Yeah, that's usually the case with Brett Wallace. Brett, you're back, and that means Team Bear Claw is reunited. I mentioned this because he was picked up, and I think I'm contractually obligated to mention Kyle Bear Claw in every edition of the podcast. So it's good to be back.
No, it's good to have you back. It is part of your contract, so I'm glad you're living up to that. But damn, he's missing a lot of bats this year. This is fun, and he's got he's got 14 strikeouts and 2 walks in 8 2/3 innings. He hasn't allowed a run. He's really good.
Yeah.
He's like, really good. Like, we know this. We've been talking about him for way too long, but yeah, he's got it. If he can throw strikes, he has the potential to be a high strikeout, end game type.
Yeah,
the stuff is there. His problem is that he walks too many guys. He walked 18 and 24 and a third last year, and I doubt this control is going to be long lasting. But if it is, that's pretty awesome.
We said all of these things about Ken Giles 2 years ago. If the command is going to stick, he's a guy who is going to put up huge strikeout numbers and pitch in high leverage. That's pretty much what Kyle Bear Claw is. He's sort of the new Ken Giles. To me, rest in peace, Ken Giles. I'm sorry. Worst trade ever.
The king is dead. Long live the king is how it goes with relievers.
I feel so bad. He had a quote the other day. He was like, "I'm just not myself." Or it was terribly depressing. To read. I feel terrible because I'm a huge fan of Ken Giles. All right. Tout Wars AL. Chris Devensky. I don't know what to make of him. He has a weird delivery. He falls towards first base on his delivery. Have either of you guys watched him? He's got a weird curveball.
I haven't seen him.
Yeah, he is strange. He gets, oh boy. I think Seattle tomorrow on Thursday.
Yeah.
Brett, any interest in Devensky? Anything or
no?
No. Okay.
No. No.
Well, he's an AL only streamer, and if you want to. If you want to start him in Seattle or Oakland or Anaheim, that's fine. And you know, he's one of those guys. You know, it's funny. There was a conversation today floating around on Twitter because of something, you know, somebody at another website said. I don't know if you saw this, Brett or George, that about, you know, why do players fail? And it was kind of the will to win kind of comment because they don't give effort. And it's like, no, the reason players fail is because playing baseball at the highest level is hard. And, you know, Chris Devensky is a guy who, and from a real life perspective, good for him. You know, he's succeeded. He's worked really hard. He's gotten to a point where I could see him floating around in this role as a fifth starter, as a spot starter, you know, more realistically as a bullpen guy for like 10 years. But yeah, in fantasy, you don't want any part of him. He's not going to last. I think the best case for him is a string of, you know, maybe 5 or 6 starts where he looks okay before people catch up to him. So yeah, I don't think you want him.
Yeah, it was either that or talk about Matt Dominguez. So pass.
No. Yeah, all these guys are just brutal. And this is the point we get at in these only leagues. And the worst part about doing fab is what Brett said in the mixed in terms of the lack of rookies. You're going to get this even more in the only leagues. There's just not going to be a lot of people to talk about in terms of these fab bits.
Yep. So that's pretty much it, unless anybody else has anyone they want to mention. Everybody good?
God, no.
No, I think we're good.
No Tim Beckham talk? Hank Conger?
I don't want to talk about Hank Conger.
I know. You could say that the AL pickups were Ryan Dull this week. All right, and with that, we're going to take a quick break and be right
George.
Back. I channeled my inner Gianella there. I hope you all enjoyed that. We'll be right back. We got a fun second segment. We're going to talk about some quote-unquote overachievers. Are they really overachievers, or are they real achievers? Well, that didn't come out right. Anyway, we'll be right back. And we're back here on Flags Fly Forever. I'm George Bissell, joined by Brett Sayre and Mike Gianella. We're going to talk about some overperformers, overachievers throughout the first month plus of the season, and whether or not we think their performance is sustainable or not. I don't want to make this the all regression show, so I'm going to try and pick some guys who we think are pretty legitimate sprinkled in throughout. So I want to start off with you, Brett, and a guy you touted often during the offseason, so I got to give you some credit here. I think all of us did as well. But Chris Carter of the Milwaukee Brewers, he is slugging 681. He's also hitting 275. He's got 9 home runs. That's 19 extra base hits this season. He's already driven in 21. He's been fantastic. He's second in baseball in slugging percentage behind the immortal Aledmys Diaz. Chris Carter, pretty legit.
I do think he's pretty legit. You know, if you look the Carter, the move to the friendly park in the friendly league and even the friendly division within a friendly league in general, it's a great move for him on paper, and that's fine. He's been a a pretty consistent 220 hitter with power the last 3 seasons or so. Really since he's been up. I mean that's his deal. And you know what he's doing so far, sure his strikeout rate is down a little bit and his walk rate is about in line, but you know, this isn't someone who's turning a corner into a 280 hitter, and I don't think anyone thinks he is, and that's not really useful. But in the National League, if he, you know, I think he can hit 250. I don't think that's out of the question. He hits the ball extremely hard, and they are going to play him consistently in Milwaukee. I mean, the only, it's not like he's a guy who is, who the Brewers, I think, are going to be looking to trade. He's a free agent in 3 years. So I think in a perfect world, they like to think that they're going to be contenders before then. Although I could see a scenario where he is dealt. I just don't think it's very likely. I go back to the tout auction, and I got called to go on Sirius during the second break, and I had spent I had filled my entire roster except for 4 spots. One was a pitching spot, and the other 3 were all 3 of my corner spots. And I was getting asked some questions about it, and I forget who. I think I was talking to Howard Bender, and he kept asking me why I was why I hadn't spent on corner guys, and I was kind of a smartass because I was in the middle of auction mode and very I was very
auction Brett is a badass, just saying. He's a badass.
I get in the zone. So I was a little proprietary with my thought process. But I told him I had guys in mind that I wanted, and I went out from the break and I immediately brought Chris Carter. I needed power, and he was the easiest buy left on the board at that point. Cause yeah, I like him coming into the season. But especially in an OBP league, it's a wonderful match. And you know, I think that there is a realistic chance that Chris Carter can hit 40 home runs this year. You know, it's not like that should really surprise anyone. He hit 37 home runs 2 years ago, and that was in Houston. He hit 24 home runs in less than 130 games last year, and he hit 199. So add in a little bit more contact and a friendlier park and the National League in general, especially in a year where this isn't a big thing in his favor, but we talk about this. The bottom of the National League sucks. Bottom of the National League looks a whole lot like AAA. And do you know who destroys AAA pitching? Chris Carter. So it is his thing, and I'm completely on board. I think if there are owners in your league who see he's off to a hot start and they're like, great, I'm gonna flip Chris Carter before he falls apart, that's fine. I would poke around and see what they would take for him. I'm liking this. I'm enjoying it, and I'm buying it.
Absolutely, Mike. There's a fun stat here. This pitcher has 44 strikeouts through his first six starts. He's also issued only 7 walks. Only 4 starters have more strikeouts through their first 6 starts, and they are Clayton Kershaw, David Price, Steven Strasburg, and Madison Bumgarner. This pitcher is Aaron Nola. How sustainable is the strikeout rate for Aaron Nola?
Well, it's not very sustainable. He should come down somewhat just because for a pitcher with his profile, of the pitchers you mentioned, he doesn't, his curveball's a great pitch, but he doesn't have, an arsenal that speaks to someone who should be this dominant. But, I know a couple people have kind of researched this, and I think Ryan Watt of Baseball Prospects and BP Wrigleyville has something. It might be up today as you're listening to this, or it might be up on Friday. I'm not sure of the schedule, but I saw he tweeted about it, that he was doing some research on Nola. But yeah, Nola's an improved pitcher. I kind of alluded to this earlier with Morgan and the work the Phillies have done with their pitchers. He's working more off the curve. He had that one bad outing where he's leaving the ball up, but he's leaving the ball down in the zone. He's just pounding the zone with the stuff he has, and he has enough of an arsenal, and all of his pitches are really good. It's repeatable. If you've seen him, the delivery is repeatable. The pitches are repeatable. I could see him striking out. I think I wrote this somewhere else. I could see him striking out, 8 to 8.5 per 9. So I don't see him staying at this level, but I do see him being above where people expected him to be. I got him for, I think it was $9 at NL Tout Wars. And I know as a mixed pitcher in deeper mix and labor, I don't remember exactly where he went, but he went kind of toward the back end of a lot of drafts. The expectation should be higher. And, even in a 12 team mixed league at this point, he's somebody that you should be considering, owning. I was looking at some of the ownership percentages in the 1-12 team mixed them in, and there's some guys that he's behind, and he's kind of borderline where, if you're carrying one of these guys, like if you're carrying Scott Kazmir at this point, for example, instead of Aaron Nola, this is kind of a layup, but Kazmir's owned in more leagues at this point than Nola. That just in ESPN leagues, that just shouldn't be. Nola should be on your team.
College pitcher pitching well, good to see. Brett, yeah.
The fun thing about Nola is that he's getting more strikeouts in almost the exact opposite way that you expect guys to get more strikeouts. You naturally think that when someone is getting more strikeouts, they are getting players to they're getting batters to chase better, because that's generally where those whiffs come from. But you know, Nola, Mike, you're absolutely right. Nola is his percentage of pitches thrown in the strike zone has jumped way up from 47.5% last year to 57.5% this year, and his he's getting batters to chase much worse. Batters chased at 61% of his pitches outside of the zone last year, and that's at 53% right now. And you know, this stuff is borderline significant. It's not really significant yet, but it's an interesting dichotomy there that he's doing it purely with his stuff in the zone, and that's a really good sign for his future.
Brett, Dexter Fowler has a .470 on base percentage that is leading the majors at the moment. Christian Yelich is hot on his heels, along with Odubel Herrera. Insert the second B for walk. Fowler also has 3 home runs, 5 steals, and I believe he's top 5 in runs scored as well with that insane offense behind him. Dexter Fowler, when we look back on this season in September, October, is he going to potentially be the best draft day bargain of any hitter in fantasy, considering where he went and where it looks like he's going to end up from a valuation standpoint?
I don't think so. I'm not as optimistic about Fowler as I am about Carter, even though I do like Fowler for what he is. I just think what he is probably a guy who could push 2020, but is just not gonna. I mean, this batting average is a complete mirage. I think he'll be close. I think he'll end up close to his usual 260 to 270 range in the end, and that might seem like a precipitous drop. But Mike, you remember from the end of last season where when Fowler gets cold, he gets really cold. and his batting average will absolutely sink. So I am with the crowd that thinks that the uptick in power is for real. I don't quite think he's a 20 home run guy, but I think he's a consistent 15 plus home run guy at this point, which really helps given his ability to run. But yeah, I'm still buying as a little bit better than people thought Dexter Fowler was going to be, but not anywhere near how good people might think Dexter Fowler is now. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm on board with that as well. Mike, Jose Altuve, he leads the league in one category that you might expect, stolen bases with 10. He's also hitting .292. But he now has 8 home runs. He's homered once by my count tonight. So he's at 8, which is among the top 10 in the game. Can you make the argument that Jose Altuve is a top 5 fantasy performer right now?
Oh, yeah. You definitely can make that argument. He's somebody who, even when he was, he only hit 15 home runs last year, whether it was a player rater argument at ESPN or the PFM or my own calculations, he was that guy. And even if you think the home runs are going to tail off, and that's a fairly realistic expectation, he has an ISO right now of 311 coming into today, which is absurd. This is a guy who could hit 20 home runs and steal 30 to 35 bases. And even if the batting average stays where it is at .290, and this is someone who's hit .341 and .313 in the last 2 years, you're looking at an elite player. The only way that I believe in discounting steal guys as a proposition is if you're talking about somebody like D. Gordon, obviously pre-suspension, or Billy Hamilton, where nearly everything they offer is in steals. But Altuve at this point offers enough in power and should continue to run. We've seen him running to this point that it's very difficult to discount him and say he doesn't belong up there. The only thing I think that could stop him from being a top five is if later in the year, for some reason, the steals tail off. But barring injury, I just don't see that.
See, I'd make the argument if the power is going to tail off, he's only going to hit for more average or get on base more. I feel like if he's not going to get to 20 home runs in that range, because we know he can hit 15. That's reasonable. But
you know, it's just funny. You know, he's a guy that we've talked about having no power, but that's really a fantasy thing, because this is somebody who's slugged. You know, some of course tied to the average, but this is somebody who's slugged over 450. You know, the last two seasons before this, and this is someone who's ISO. You know, we're not talking about somebody like a one-dimensional guy whose ISO was below 100. So the power, such as it was, there was always a nugget of it there. Mm-hmm. So this isn't a player who had no capability to hit home runs at all. This is someone who the potential was there, and you see this as players get a little bit older. You see the profile where, you know, they get to like be, you know, mid-20s, late-20s. They grow a little bit into their power. You know, again, I'm not suggesting that Jose Altuve is going to hit 40 home runs this year, but at this point where he's at, you know, if he hits 20 to 25, I don't think we should be that surprised.
If Jose Altuve hit 40 home runs, we all just sign off. We're done. Brett, Byung-ho Park, a player who now has 7 home runs. He's slugging .605. Over under 18 home runs for Byung-ho Park.
I'm going to take the over at this point.
He's better than we thought? Question mark?
I mean, he's starting off better. I mean, the contact issues are still there in spades. I mean, he's got 25 strikeouts in 85 plate appearances. So you're talking about an easy 30%+ strikeout rate. So the 250 batting average is a little bit of a mirage at that. And I think, you know, I think pitchers are going to, you know, pitchers are still figuring it out. I think they're going to adjust to him. So I don't think he's going to pace for nearly as much power as he's pacing for, but he's gotten off to enough of a start where I think that I think 18 is a pretty low bar to clear right now.
Mike, Jordan Zimmermann has a sub-1 ERA, one of two pitchers through their first 5 starts with that mark. The other, of course, is Jake Arrieta, who I hear is pretty good. Jordan Zimmermann, ERA over or under 3 at the end of the year?
I'm going to go a little bit over just because as great as Zimmerman's been, it's difficult to see him keeping up a .55. And for a pitcher, you know, even with the run he's having, he's got a little bit over 6 strikeouts per 9. He's in the American League. He's not going to be facing, outside of interleague play, some of those bad National League lineups that Brett talked about earlier. Is there anyone still with the Nationals? I could see him finishing, just because he's so low already, I could see him finishing with 2.4 or 2.5 easily. But a pitcher with this profile, it's not difficult to see him with a start or with a run where, you know, he's puts up like a 4 over like a 4-5-6 start run and just winds up regressing. We've kind of seen this before with pitchers with this kind of start. There's just nothing there to really indicate that he can continue to pitch at this level. And based on the level of opposition, I just don't see it in the profile. Now, I will say, you know, I know we talked about this in the preseason with Zimmermann. I think before labor that, you know, Brett, I know you weren't that high on him and I wasn't that high on him, but this, I would say he's better than what we expected. And I would say I was wrong on him, but this level, there's going to come a point where he kind of struggles a little bit. And I see him, you know, it's close, but I see him finishing a little bit over 3.
All right, one more for each of you, and then we'll wrap up and get out of here. Brett Drew Pomeranz is striking out over 11 batters per nine. He's throwing the knuckle curve a bit more. He also pitches in San Diego, coincidentally, which I hear is good for pitchers in that environment. Drew Pomeranz, top 50 starter the rest of the way?
50?
You can make it, the walks are still up, but
yeah, I mean the strikeouts are nice. I don't know. That's
it's aggressive.
I'm gonna say no, but not that far off.
That's fair. Mike, Aledmys Diaz.
He's not going to hit 500 if that's what you're.
No, I was going to ask: is he from the planet Earth, or is he an extraterrestrial who's been sent here to just cause all of us to lose our minds?
He's from Earth, but he's having a terrific month. As often happens with prospects like this, he's a really good baseball player who's having a really good streak, and he's going to slip. You know, we had this conversation about Jeremy, is it Hazelbaker or Hazelbaker a couple weeks ago?
Jeremy not going to work here, Baker?
Yeah, not going to work here, Baker. Diaz is going to go through a stretch where he's human, and at that point, I could see him in a situation where he takes some time from Colton Wong, who's struggled all year, and works in some at bats, but once Johnny Peralta's healthy, Diaz will be more of a part timer or a half timer than what he's doing now.
All right, I have one more fun one, and it's for Brett. Brett, David Ortiz is slugging .612. He's hitting .306 with 5 home runs. Could he play until he's 50?
It certainly looks like that.
Is there a chance that he decides, like in August, like, hey, you know what? If you want to give me $15 million next year, I'm coming back. Could that happen?
No. No, I don't think there's any chance. I mean, he's got so much money.
That's true.
If I had David Ortiz's money, I wouldn't come back.
Well said. Makes me wonder, though, how long could he play? I mean, these numbers are insane. And Victor Martinez, too. I mean, he's hitting .341 with 5 home runs. These old DH types are just continuing to hit, and it's kind of crazy. All right.
It was did you listen to the episode of Effectively Wild where Sam said that he talked to one of the people that was at the supposed Barry Bonds, Giancarlo Stanton, and Christian Yelich, like impromptu home run derby?
Yeah, I did.
Kind of.
Yes.
I forget who the person was, but at the end of the whole story, he asked him what he thought Barry Bonds would hit as a DH this season. And I think the answer was that he would hit .320 with 20 home runs.
Although he's in the perfect organization, like, couldn't you see Miami doing that? Like, I don't know, just a random homestand. They're like, hey,
that was my first reaction when he signed up to be the hitting coach for the Marlins. I was like, that would be the perfect way to get people to show up.
Serious question: is there a rule that you can't do that? Like, if they were playing an interleague DH series, and they were like, hey, you know, Barry's going to DH today. Is there a rule against that? Or, like, what are the rules on that?
You have to sign to a player contract and, you know, take up a roster spot. But, yeah, otherwise you could do it. The only rule, I believe, and this happened with Minnie Minoso when the White Sox kept bringing him back once a decade, it would just be a Hall of Fame thing. Like, Bonds would have to play a certain amount of time for that clock to start again.
Well, hang on. This gets interesting. This is becoming an Effectively Wild segment. But doesn't that also reset his clock? So wouldn't that be in his benefit to do that almost?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I you know, and this would be a better question for Sam or Ben, who, you know, we listen to them, and I'm sure they don't listen to us. But
they're good. Go buy their book.
I actually did. I'm waiting for it. But Minnie Minoso, and I'm trying to frantically look this up as we talked about it. So, you know, he came back once a decade for the White Sox and played like a game. And the first time he did it, I believe he was like 49, and they reset the clock for him. And when he did it again, the Hall of Fame and the people on that rules committee were like, yeah, like we're not resetting the clock for you again. This is clearly a stunt. So for Bonds, I think he would have to be active not just for one game series or not just for one game. He'd have to be active for long enough for the committee to look at it and go, well, yeah, he was actually playing.
It's instantly the most fascinating story in baseball in like 5 years, though.
It would be, although it does sound like, you know, I didn't listen to the segment, and I don't know what, you know, did Bond say he would actually play or want to play? Because
this is just me speculating.
Somebody did ask him seriously, and what he said in March, you know, when he was in the cages, he's like, yeah, you know, I felt good at first, but, you know, I got tired really fast, and that's what it comes down to, which is, you know, if you're asking me to take like 10 swings, you know, he didn't say this, but it's like, I'm Barry Bonds. You know, if you're asking me to, like, you know, go out in the field for nine innings, like I'm a, you know, wherever he is, like a 50 some year old man, like I'm tired.
Yep. All right. Last question I have that is bothering me. David Price has an ERA over 6. Does that make any sense to anyone here?
No, and it doesn't need to.
Yeah, I'll leave that there.
Yep. All right, so that's it. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and wrap things up here on Flags Fly Forever. Back. Thank you for listening to episode 89 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us and the entire BP Fantasy team on baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a super premium membership today. You get exclusive access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Send us a question. You get a response within 12 hours, usually a lot sooner than that. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Genoa. You can email us, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. Finally, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. For Brett Sayer, Mike Genoa, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until our next show coming up next week, have a good night, everybody.